gray line of this, that will be put in the video. I don't know if it's the major kind of section, regions of the jackets, then the laws will be defined in the law, the whole unit, like we're going to go down to the staff and then the stock is going to compare the whole unit, because it's staff and care. Kind of like an entity where crucially a prominent feature will have for that the devotees up to now that it's the first part of the three chapters establishing the concept of the Bhagavad Gita. Then there's fourth to sixth, then we're giving a Garda Muni and Vyasadeva on the top of the reason for the Bhagavad Gita. Then 7, 8, 9, we have the devotees introducing the Lord. And then the 10th, then he becomes the father. Does that make sense? So like this, then we'll start breaking out into smaller units like this to get a bit nicer. And today we'll give out the 6th, you've given? No. We'll give it out, right? Yeah, we'll give it out the 6th chapter. It's been redone. He's added into it various other sections and things like that. And I think Maharaj explained tomorrow is that two other studies will come along with this. One is that, because the Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. It's not a direct commentary. Natural means the Vedanta Sutra is the essence of the Upanishads. The Upanishads are the essence of the Veda. Then Lord Brahma asked Krishna to describe, after Madhu and Kaitava had stolen the Veda from his mind, he asked him, please re-speak it, but first give me the essence. So in 4 shlokas, he gave him the essence, that's the essence of the Veda. Then after he re-spoke the Veda. So those 4 shlokas that were given to Brahma were given to Narad. Narad gave to Vyas. Vyas expanded those 4 as the Bhagavatam. Does that make sense? So it's the essence of the Veda. And the Vedanta is taken from the essence of the Veda, which is the Upanishads. Right? So both are essence. So, but the Bhagavatam is taking it a step further. So it's the natural commentary. So then, Maharaj, in the work that he's done previously, he's gone through and all the Vedanta Sutra verses, their connection to the Bhagavatam verses and their full explanation has been done. So what we'll start doing is when we finish with the 9th chapter, then he'll go back and what's significant out of Vedanta Sutra and showing its points and the points given by Bhagavatam will be discussed. So that will be one study. Another will be that Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given categorized important verses of the Bhagavatam according to Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. And so then those verses will also be, you know, just now that we've done, you know, study the area, then go back and just check those verses. As it goes, probably those verses will start to be worked in. But he didn't want to, he wanted to work it in slowly because this is the first time it's going through and it meant the material may be new to devotees, the concepts. So he's allowing it because as it goes, it'll get a little bit more deep and complex. But at the same time, as there'll be much more breaks in the progress of the course to go through, discuss those, and analyze those. Does that make sense? So it's not going to just be daily just reading this section, going through it, reading, going through it. We'll do that, and then there'll be a break where we'll discuss all these different things, and it's seen how it fits together as a unit, its comparison to other parts of the Bhagavatam and that. Then move on again to the next section, you know, because we don't want it to be just so much just the you know, studying and then doing. There should also be plenty of discussion so it you know, soaks in. So it's not just an academic exercise. Okay, so then, yes, please.
Just from the first presentation on the Bhagavatam cantos, how mm-hmm. they compare the you know, parts of the body and how mm-hmm. Bhagavatam repeats 6 philosophies. Mm-hmm. So, I was just wondering about reference, because it's a nice point, it's really nice.
Do you know where that reference is? The six philosophies, that would be from Prabhupada, because he mentions in the first chapter, I think it's in the first chapter, might even be in the first shloka. No, it's later. It's later when he talks about when they start the discussion. Then, and Suta Goswami sits on the asana, they invite him and that. Then Prabhupada mentions that the speaker, the Bhagavatam, should know, be able to refute the six philosophies. So the Vedanta Sutra, one of the major aspects that it does is refute the six philosophies. So Bhagavatam as a natural commentary would also be doing the same thing. So that reference would come from there. Does that make sense? The other one, do you know where that reference is, mm-hmm. Number 12? Maharaj mentioned it the other day. You'd have to ask that one to Maharaj. But I mean, it's always been mentioned that the cantos go according to the lotus feet of the Lord and this and that. That's a standard. But this particular one, the reference, I'm not sure.
Vedanta Sutra is already part of Shatanshana, Uttaranimamsa.
Yeah, no, Vedanta Sutra is part of is the Uttaranimamsa. But what it's defeating is there is also, in Uttaranimamsa, you have two forms. You have the impersonal form and the personal form. In other words, Uttaranimamsa, according is Vedanta Sutra, it's written by Vyas, but you have Shankara's approach to it. So it's impersonal. Or you have Vyas, the author, his approach to it, which is personal. So the Saddarshan can be taken in two ways. Means Uttaranimamsa is bona fide, the other five are bogus. Right? Or sometimes you see Prabhupada relate to it that the six darshans are bogus. That's meaning that Uttaranimamsa or Vedanta is being taken from the angle of Shankara. Then all six are bogus. But if we're taking it that the Uttaranimamsa, the Vedanta is according to Vyas, then that's bona fide, the other five. Right? So sometimes you get him talking about the one and then five, or sometimes it's you know, proper and six. Right? So you get that. And generally you won't see so much, but then so it won't be confused, there are also six darshans on Vedanta itself. Right? You have the four sampradayas. Then you have Baladeva Dibhushan, Arline, as the fifth, and then Shankara, his commentary is the sixth. Does that make sense? So you have the impersonal, the four Vaishnav Sampradayas, and then the Gaudiyas. Like that. So in that way, then you're always dealing with the six. So it seems to be a good number. Like that. Anything else? No. Yeah. G had something there.
Yes, I had a question on when we were discussing how Vedavyas divided the Vedas. I had two questions on it. First one was that in the Kusha Sukta, which is written before the Vedas were divided, that says that Richas Samani Jagire, Chandagam Si Jagire, Tasmatra, means the naming of the four Vedas seem to be already there before they were parted. Mm-hmm. There's one question, how it links with the, I mean, they're already existing in the form, the six Sama, mm-hmm. how they were divided. And the other one is that how are we as ISKCON linked specifically to the Vedas in ritual, in sanskara, and in...
Okay, what's our connection? So on the Veda, Prabhupada mentions originally there's just the Atharva Veda, because Atharva means just kind of like miscellaneous or everything. So then...
Sorry, he says to this reference I also thought. Sometimes he
says Yajur is Atharva Veda. Yeah, well Yajur would mean is because of the application. Okay, well then let's look at it like this. We'll step back. That in the Veda, then it has basically four kinds of information. You could say four kinds of verses, right? The first would be the riks. Those are the hymns. Right? So then the second would be the prose. The third would be the songs, the samans. And the fourth would be what's not those first three. Does that make sense? Because that's a general category. Like you have the Brahmins deal with knowledge, the Kshatriyas deal with influence, the Vaishyas deal with economics, and who doesn't do those three, that's the fourth category. You understand? Because it's connected with all the other three. Right? The Shudras assist Brahmins, Shudras assist Kshatriyas, Shudras assist Vaishyas. But they're not those three. So in the same way, the Atharva, what's there, because it covers all the different arts and sciences, all those arts and sciences are connected to the other three. Does that make sense? Okay. So you have those three kinds of, you know, knowledge or shlokas in the Veda. So before then, it would be whichever way you're looking at it, Atharva meaning it's just like all the knowledge together, or Yajra meaning it's application. Because the Rik will call. With the Riks, you call the deity into the fire. Right? So the Hota, who does the Yajna, he is a Rigvedi. Right? The person who sets up the whole Yajshala, prepares all the preparations, get everything ready, and all that, builds the fire, you know, and does all the preliminary pujas and all that. In other words, makes it ready for the deity to come. That's the Yajurvedi.
He's a priest.
Yeah.
He's not a Yajurvedi.
No, he's called the Advarya. Yeah. You can see all these names in Balir Maharaj. Maharaj mentions it all the priests there. Sometimes you get Hota or Hotri, depending upon how you grammatically say it. Then the person who chants the mantra sees that the mantra chanting is going properly. That's the Udgata. He is a Samavedi. Right? Then you have the Brahma priest. He knows all the three Vedas. And he is the yajna, let's say, supervisor, manager. He sees that everything's going right for those other three priests. So okay, he's called the Brahma. Okay.
So he must be a Chaturvedi, according to that.
He has to be a Trivedi. Yeah, because the Trivedi is important. Because this is, you know, your general standard. Some yajnas, they also have a fourth, they have the Atharva Veda is also represented. But not necessarily. Then you can have the fifth main priest, which is the Acharya, and he sets the whole mood and direction and everything over the whole thing. He doesn't manage it, he's more of just like the spiritual head. Does that make sense? You know, like you have the GBC, you know, is there, and the temple president does the managing. Under the temple president, he has vice president, the treasurer, Sankirtan leader, like that. And they do the work. So that means the Hotri, the Udgatri, the Advaryu, and the Brahma, they're the ones that are actually doing the work, and the Acharya is there. That's in very big ones. If it's not, then the Brahma's the head, the Acharya's, you don't need the Acharya. But sometimes if there's Acharya, then his assistants are doing it. Like there, Balimara Shukracharya is the Acharya at the Yajna, so his disciples would be doing the other four parts, and he'd just be watching. But, you know, they're his disciples, so it's his mood, his direction. Does that make sense? Okay. So with the Rig Veda, you call it, means with the Yajur Veda, you establish everything. With the Rig Veda, you call the deity. With the Sama Veda, you glorify the deity. So basically what you end up with is that Rig is like Sambandha, Yajra is the Abhideya, and Sama is the Prayojana. Does that make sense? Okay. And then Atharva is all miscellaneous things that connect with all those. Does that make some sense?
There's one aspect of it.
Okay, so that's all together in one Veda. All that knowledge is there. But to make it easier for people to understand, then he pulls out everything that's Rik and puts it in one thing, everything that's prose puts it in one place, everything that's samans puts it in one place, and whatever's left over, then that stays as the atarva. Does that make sense? How that works?
So Sadasya is also part of the yajna. What do they do? The Sadasya.
Who?
Those who. Sadasya means like.
They are senior, respected persons. You know, like Narad Muni comes to the yajna, or, you know, Parasaram will come to the yajna, or Vyasa would come to the yajna. They don't hold a position, but at the same time, they're so respectable, maybe even more than the priests themselves. But they don't manage it and that, but they're there. So in case there's any question or any major thing, then it's put to the sadasis. Like you see in the snake sacrifice of Janamejaya. Then they're performing the yajna, and they've called Takshaka. Takshuka now has taken shelter of Indra, and Indra feels that he's powerful enough to protect him. When the mantra starts to work on Takshuka, then it starts to draw him to the fire. He starts to pull, so he goes inside Indra's clothes, you know, hides inside. The mantra is so powerful it starts pulling him and Indra. So Indra figures out, well, maybe this friendship isn't worth that much, you know, endeavor. And so he's being pulled into the fire like this. At the same time, what's his name? Astika, who is the son of Vasuki's sister. Means, in other words, the snakes, they all had one sister. What is it? Jarat? Yes. And her husband was named Jarat Karu. And so they had a son that was Astika. And he was actually, of the arrangement, he was born to stop the snake sacrifice because the snake's mother had cursed them that they would all be killed in the sacrifice. Great mom. So then... Then he walks in at that time, and because he's walked in, then they have to receive him because he's a Brahmin, like that. Even though he's a child, he's still a Brahmin. So then, just like when Vamanadeva walked in, they, you know, stopped everything and respected him and like that. So then he comes in, and then he offered prayers and all that, glorifying the king and everything like this. And then the king was so pleased he wanted to give him some benediction. So he asked the sadasyas, you know, they asked, say yes. Then he says, stop the snake sacrifice. That's what I want. And so then, but the snake sacrifice has been started for that. It has a purpose. The king shouldn't start anything that he's not going to finish. You know, even if he sees that what he's doing isn't working, only after great deliberation should he stop it. He shouldn't just whimsically stop it, because he didn't whimsically start it. So with great deliberation he started it, with great deliberation only he should stop it. So then it's asked to the sadasyas what they feel. And they feel that, you know, the situation, he's made his point, this Brahmin boy has come, and what he's asking is proper, and it won't be against the king's desire. It will not look bad upon him that he's been stopped in his attempt. You know, in other words, it's auspicious from all angles. Like that. So then they say, no, it's okay to stop. And then, so then they stop it. So the sadasyas seem to have that kind of position. They're there. If there is some question that no one knows how to do or deal with an etiquette or some ritual or that's one of the things. The other thing is the sadasyas that would be the ones that would be the main participants in the discussions. Right? Because when you have a sacrifice, then you would have discussions between. Because the yajna doesn't take all day. They'll do something in the morning, something in the evening. Like that. So then in between, you know, either early morning or just after that. Sometime in the morning there would be discussions, and they would break for lunch and rest and all that. Then they would start again in the evening. So in those times in between the yajnas, then that would be where they would discuss scripture. Just like at the snake sacrifice, the discussion was Mahabharata, like that. And at the intervals between the yajna Naimisharanya, then the various Puranas, Mahabharata, Bhagavatam. You know, in other words, as we have received these scriptures, they're mostly all the discussions of Sutta Goswami with the sages at Naimisharanya, headed by Shonaka Rishi, like that. So does that make sense? So in that thing, then Sutta would be a sadasya. They would lead, and depending on what it is, then you see others come also. You know, like in the case, let us say, the example would be is that you have Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. That's the actual yajna. That's the thing. But he's speaking, but then so many other great sages and personalities from the universe came to hear. So they're all sadasyas. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like that. So in that, you always have that, you know, like the senior, when you're doing, so they get special seating arrangements and this and that, and everything's kind of run by them. You know, their approval that it's going right and everything like that. But, you know, they're not responsible, but they're the ones that are giving your blessings. So they would be respected, taken care of nicely, and all that. Does that make sense?
They
were part of the four Vedas. Not necessarily. They may be from any discipline. That doesn't matter. You know, like we don't think of Narad Muni from a particular Veda or like this. And I know if he studied all of them, right? I think he mentioned to Sanat Kumar that he studied them all. You know, and still he doesn't know the essence. So then he comes to him for the essence. Like that. Yes.
One thing about Atharva Veda. I mean, somebody might ask a question, what is all this miscellaneous things are there? It's something like herbs, for example, durva, kushagras, and all these things, how they function, what they do. Or the mudras, for example, they also mentioned there. So basically, all the foundations of all the Vedas and all the arts, everything is based on the Atharva Veda.
So all the rituals and arts and...
Yeah. It's like you have the mudras, for example, what you use for... Paramatima used for sacrifices would be originated from Atharva Veda.
Mm-hmm.
Or the grass, all the different plants,
mm-hmm.
or different kind of instruments used.
Implements. I think also warfare.
Well, yeah.
All the details of warfare,
yeah,
and
like
poisons and incantations, and you know, anything that would be used in the other or explain the other. It would be just like you have the Veda and then you have the Brahmanas. And so the Brahmanas tell how it's used. The Aranyakas tell the metaphysics behind it. So most likely it's dealing like that. It's giving the background to things that are necessary. You know, because like in the Yajur, it'll say that for the Soma Yajna, then you'll use this many bricks and so many of this shape and that. It probably will tell the details how to make the brick. You know, that would be, does that make some sense? That kind of... Because you have to have that. You have to have the arts and sciences.
So that would be the biggest Veda then?
Not necessarily. Because so much is already explained. From what I've heard, Rig Veda has 10,000 verses. Yajur Veda has 8,000 verses. The Sama Veda has, I think, 1,300? Like that? 1,300. Between 1,200 and 300. And the Yajurveda has, I think, 6,000. Or I think it's about 5.5.
Sorry, you said Yajurveda 8,000.
8,000, yeah.
Mahavira.
Has about 5.5.
5.5.
This is what I've heard. Somebody was explaining that to me, and the Samaveda was explaining that. Because he was saying at their school, it takes 10 years to learn the Rigveda. It takes 8 years to learn Yajur. Takes 5 to 6 to learn the Atharva. And I forget what he said it takes to learn the Sama. Because even though it's less verses, it's very lengthy, one Saman. You know, because even though it's like, you know, you can go Agna Aya Hivitaye Grinano Habirate Yehota Shatsi Varhishi. That'll be the first verse. But in Saman, then, say, yeah, and then there's three forms of it. Yeah, so that's why it takes longer.
Something to chant that's four times slower.
Yeah, it means you just did it quick, you know, like that.
That means all sages are musicians then.
Those who know, because traditionally they would know the three Vedas, so then they would know the music, because all the musical elements come out of the Samaveda, like that. All the different ragas, all the different, it's all.
They say that only 6% of the Vedas is remains like we have it now in Kali Yuga.
6%.
Yeah, and everything is lost.
Maybe. It doesn't matter. The essence is the Purushottama anyway. Means Lord Chaitanya explains to Prakashananda Saraswati that you have the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra that expands as the Kama Gayatri. The Kama Gayatri expands as the Brahma Gayatri. That the bead syllable of the Brahma Gayatri, Om, that comes through into the material world. Right? Then, when it comes out on the other side of the Viraja, then the Om expands into Burbhuvaswa. That expands into the Brahma Gayatri. The Brahma Gayatri expands into Purushushukta. The Purushushukta expands into the Veda. So, that's the how it functions like that. So this way, you have four Purushushuktas. One that's for the Riks, one that's for the Samans, one that's for the prose, and one that's the miscellaneous. The basic principles, they all are talking about Krishna's creation. That's why you're talking about the demigods, the this, the that. But that's not these after, because before creation, there weren't any demigods. Right? There wasn't even Brahma. So this is Krishna's creation. So he's there, Garbhodaksha Vishnu is there with all the Suris, you know, his eternal associates. So the primordial demigods, you know, Garuda and Hanuman and all these other personalities are all there. Those are his eternal associates. They then, because there's nothing, they have to do the sacrifice to create the universe. There's nothing there. The only thing that's there is the Lord. So the Lord is taken as the animal for the sacrifice. So they take him and tie him to the yupe. You know, there's that kind of thing like this. They put the animal's head there for sacrifice. So they tie him to that. And as soon as they do that, then the mental sacrifice, then, you know, then out of like that, all out of from his head come the Brahmins, from his arm come the Kshatriyas like this, and then all the Vedas, and the sun and moon from his eyes, everything just starts happening like that. So it's kind of an ununderstood point, because generally devotees, it's kind of a little hard to relate to that they're going to sacrifice the Lord, because there's nothing else. But there is nothing else, so what are you going to do? You know. So, but by just going through it, then it happens, right? Like that. So they don't have to sacrifice it, like that.
I think the Gita also mentions this. Everything offered as sacrifice in Brahma is also Brahma.
Yeah. So everything. That's the whole thing. The sacrifice is Krishna. What's offered, the elements are Krishna, the mantra is Krishna, the fire is Krishna, the person offering is Krishna, what's offered, the ghee is Krishna. The results come from Krishna, so it's all Krishna. It's just for rasa, then you make distinction between them. You know? It means Krishna and Radharani are the same. The energy and the energetic are non-different, but you make a distinction. And then you have rasa. Does that make sense? So, like that. Is that okay then? How? Okay, so our connection is in Bengal, the main bulk of these Brahmins are Samavedis. So Lord Chaitanya was a Samavedi. So then Gopal Bhatta Goswami, then he took the Samaveda as our, like, let's say, you know, domestic or our home Veda. So our samskars are coming from the Samaveda. In the, what is it? Gobila Griya Sutras. So that's the Griya Sutra for the Samaveda. So he took that and basically brought out the Krishna consciousness in it. And he gave that to us as Satkriya Sardipika. So technically speaking, Gobila Griha Sutras. So technically speaking, we're Samavedis. You know, as far as our rituals go, we will use Samaveda. Our samskars will use Samaveda. So since we don't bother with the, you know, all the Shrauta Yagyas and things like that, then we don't do anything like that. For us, then we just perform the, you know, our main sacrifice, our sacrifice is Harinam Sankirtan.
But the way you chant the mantras in the sacrifice, it doesn't seem to be salvation.
No, but that doesn't matter like that. Because you'll use it in different ways. Because because it takes a lot from other places. Even those Gobila Griya Sutras, it's taking a lot from Shukla Yajurveda and other things, the verses. They're from all over the place.
And it's most popular, I feel, even among other Sampradayas, the Gobila Griya Sutra. Even Max Muller translated that book.
Mm.
So it seems to be the most popular, most used book.
Well, it's very straightforward. Like that, very, you know, very clear. You know, that may be also why it was Gopal Bhatta. I mean, he took it. You know. Also, we are Rupa Goswami's line, his family, they were Shukla Yajurvedis. So we see is that the Ishopanishad, that's Shukla Yajurveda. So we were giving that, so that's so according to philosophy, we're Shukla Yajurvedis. Right? But according to samskar, we're Samavedis. Right? And for general Parayana, at least here in the school, we're using the
what is
Parayana? Parayana means, how you say, chanting for, you know, auspiciousness, like that. You know, just recitation, like you at the elephant procession, you just chant, or at programs, you just chant Vedic mantra. It's not for a specific ritual. You're not using a ritual. So in that, we'll use the Krishna Yajurved, the Taittiriya Shaka, because it's in that way the most, I'd say, in one aspect, ornamental. You can chant it very slowly, and that, and it has kind of the most variation in it.
Is it stuti? Stuti.
Stuti, no, not so much. Stuti are specifically prayers. But Parayana just means you may be chanting Purusha Shukta, you may be chanting Upanishad, you may be chanting Vedanta Sutra, Gita, anything. It just means that you're reciting these things. So we use all three like that. I mean, we use those three, Shukla Yajurved, Krishna Yajurved, and Samaved. But in the rituals and that are given by the acharyas, then a lot of Rig Veda verses also come. Like that. But I don't think we have anything from Atharva Veda, is it?
Some shlokas are there. Adivasi, there are some shlokas.
Oh, there are some of them are from there.
This is for the Yagya, usually chant out for Vedas. That's why they chant the Brahma Yagyas in the beginning of the Yagya.
Oh, okay.
So they are all four
Vedas. So all four are represented. Yeah.
But there's always like a, everybody has day on. Veda, Leo, Shaka, what they follow.
Mm-hmm.
But besides that, they also know other Veda, it's not just mm-hmm. But the ritual, what they do, daily ritual, it's according to Leo, Shaka.
Mm-hmm.
But they can chant also other Vedas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then you see some of them will chant the other Vedas according to their Vedic grammar. Because every Veda has its own pratishaka, which means its specific uniqueness of how it's chanted, its own grammar of swaras and that. But in our research, we found that the most proper is you chant the Veda according to its own pratishaka.
What is that?
Means Rig has its own, Sama has its own, like this.
Is that a name for it?
The pratishaka, each one has. Which one? For
Rigveda. Shravana Karishi is the acharya.
Oh, okay.
That who is asking the questions in the world. So he's not a bozo from the street.
He's very senior. Otherwise, why would they have him and Sutta always? That I know of, I've heard that all the 18 Puranas are spoken as discussions between those two. Like that, so, you know, it's like less than. So in other words, perfect questions, perfect answers.
The Gotra aspect?
Gotra aspect, that will be according to, means generically as Gaudiyas, then this is the lines that we use for our samskars. But the Gotra will be according to family. You know, whatever is your family line, then that will be the Gotra. If you don't have a specific Gotra, then you follow a Chitta Gotra.
But the Chitta is not a Rishi, it's the Lord's himself.
Yeah, but that's, Krishna in the Gita says he's the Pita Maha, so he kind of, you know, he has a tendency to get around these things. It was one of the complaints of Shishupal. Because, you know, this guy doesn't have any varna, doesn't have nothing, you know, it's like, you know, one day he's a Kshatriya, the next day he's a Vaishya, the next day, you know, he's acting as a messenger, as a Brahmin, the next day he's driving a chariot, what's going on here? And then this is the guy that you're offering argue to, is the most senior and respected, you know, here, you know, like that. You got Brahma here, you have Narad here, you have, you know, anyway, even if you have kings, you have Bhishma here, or, you know, Drupad, you know, they're at least your senior relatives, you know, but well, why this guy? You know, so it seems it's been a long outstanding doubt about Krishna's that he somehow or another seems to circumvent, you know, all these things. Because he is the origin of the, he's the origin of Brahma, who's the origin of the Prajapatis. So that's why he's the grandfather. You know, so it's like, you know, it's just the normal thing is that you have your father, but if something happens to your father, then you just take shelter of the grandfather. Right? That's the way it works, isn't it? You have so many brothers, if your father dies, you don't go with the other brother, you go to the grandfather. Like that, because the grandfather has that kind of, because the other one is kind of like, hey, I got my family. But the grandfather, they're all his family, so then it's a natural connection. So if you have no Gotra, then you move into the best Gotra. You know, it's like, I think, it's also, sometimes you get that on the material platform. Wasn't that what, if you have no food, then you eat cake, right? Wasn't that?
No bread.
Yeah, I think one French queen presented that, but because she presented it in a non-Vedic society, they didn't appreciate it. It didn't reciprocate. Yeah, she didn't get any gold stars for that one.
It seems sometimes that not the Prajapatis, but that other rishis established about the Pradhan, he's not one of the Prajapatis.
He's one of the Prajapatis, yeah. Means the 10 sons of Brahma, some of them are Prajapatis, and then their children, some of them become Prajapatis. So there's 21 Prajapatis. So between the sons and grandsons of Brahma, those are the Prajapatis. So you had 10 sons, the mind sons, but not all of them are Prajapatis. Shiva's not a Prajapati, Narad's not a Prajapati, the 4 Kumaras are not Prajapatis. Like that. So that's right there, cuts down to 7. So then those 7 plus 14 more, then those become the Prajapatis. So Gotra means it goes back to one of those 21. You know, so that's...
Oh, I see. So there's not unlimited Gotras?
No, no. There's only 21 Gotras. Like that. Well, 22 if you count Achyuta. It's 21. Yeah.
Who is Sarasvata? Is a rishi? Because this Sarasvata Gotra, Rupa
Zalanda, Goswami, Rupa Zalanda. They were Bharadwaj Shaka.
Gotra,
I'm not sure. Where is it, Saraswat? There, no, that's Saraswat. They were Saraswat Brahmins. That's more generic than within that. They're Gaur Saraswat Brahmins. Means along the Saraswati River, the Brahmins that lived there, that would have been in, not you have Bharat, Varsha, Bharat. What is that place called? Bharata? Can't remember. Bharata. Means the area around the Saraswati River. That would have been basically the northern part of Punjab. You know? That area there, where the Saraswati River was, along there. That's considered, in Vedic back, other than Kali Yuga, that is the topmost place on the planet. Then, the next, you know, major is expanding from there down to Kuru Jungala, means the area where the Kurus were kings. So that would be down to like Delhi and that. That area. Then the next would be that you expand it over to basically Ayodhya, Varanasi. Like that. And that's considered like that's the main civilized area. But then it has a bigger expansion that includes beyond that, that it goes from there over, it means you go over to the Indian Ocean. You know, it means you come down, you know, like, you know, it would be like where Sindh is, Lahore and those areas there. Then across above the Vindhya Mountains and below the Himalayas over to the Bay of Bengal. Does that make sense? So that patch, that's called Aryavarta. So within that is where civilized human beings lived. Outside that, that's for the tribals. Does that make sense? So the Brahmins from that place, they were considered the top of all the Brahmins. So those are the Saraswat Brahmins. Now, when the Saraswati River dried up, because at first it flowed into the ocean, then somehow or another it started flowing backwards and going back inland and disappearing into the ground. And now it's just sunk, so it flows underground and you can't see it. So then all that whole civilization of Brahmins, they shifted from there, they moved. And when they moved, then basically there were two groups. One group went directly south and settled like in the Konkan area. That's like Goa, Carnatic, northern Carnatic, and lower Maharashtra. So they're called the Saraswat Brahmins. Another group, which seems to be somehow or another, from what I can understand, the senior group, they went to Bengal and settled there for some time. So they became known as the Gaur Saraswat Brahmins because they settled in Goda. Then, with time, it appears that a majority of them, or they then migrated the south to the same basic area that the Saraswat Brahmins were. But they're still distinct. You have the SBs and the GSBs. You know, you still have the difference. So Rupa Goswami's family is Gaur Saraswat. They had gone south. They were living in Karnataka. And then from what I know of, Rupa Goswami's father migrated back to their ancestral home in Bengal. And so they were living there. So there may be so many, you know, Gotras that would not, they have to be. Otherwise, if all the Saraswat Brahmins are of one Gotra, then they can't marry each other. Because the boy and girl have to be from a different gotra. You know, they can't be from the same gotra. Otherwise, what do you call it? You have sakulya and sa. Yes, yeah, sagotra. It means they can't be the same. It means one is they have a common gotra, the other they have a common ancestor within seven generations. That's why you have to know. Traditionally, a good family, you have to know your gotra and your seven generations back of who is your ancestors. such families then good families would marry into, because you don't want to, there should be no mix like that. So that's why, let's say if the girl doesn't have a father, no one knows, traditionally you wouldn't marry such a girl because she might be a relative, you don't know, like that. So they would generally avoid. Yeah, they were careful about that.
This point you mentioned, that the landowner of the Saraswati, because there's with topmost, but if you look at Swayambhu Manu, he founded Ayodhya. And
means it's topmost in that those are where the top Brahmins sit. In other words, this definition is given in Manusamhita when who you should hear the law from. In other words, the law heard from a person from there, and according to the traditions followed by the persons from there. Because you have a law, it must be applied. Does that make sense? So when you apply it, then you get the particulars of the thing, you know? It's not specifically stated by the Veda, but the principle is given, and this is a way to apply it. You know, just like it says, you should clean the floor. Okay, you use a coconut broom, you use a full jaru, you can use so many ways you could clean the floor. You know what I'm saying? Point is it gets swept. Like that. So then, accordingly, how the virtuous persons apply it, that's generally a preferred tradition over one that is created by those who are not so pious. Does that make sense? Therefore, you would want to get their understanding and their tradition from there. And that's why it keeps going back like that. So it's kind of like out to Ayodhya, that is where it's kind of like considered quite, you know, very civilized. But of that, they're all taking the lead from the Saraswat Brahmins. Like that. Prabhupada also mentions that the kind of higher class in Bengal, they came from the up country. So that has two meanings. One is up country means Ayodhya, because from there, then they came down into Bengal. And the other is up country means, you know, Punjab, where the Saraswat Brahmins were. In other words, they moved from there to Ayodhya. From there, they moved down into Bengal. Like that. Okay, that's it.
My questions, they are very simple, no? Like in Prabhu, I think it's very big of philosophy.
No, the thing is these things are applied.
No, it's okay. Yeah. But it's just the nice questions and all that.
I mean, these things are asked to me.
They're very nice. It means we should not be, The point is it's a question, and it was connected to something said or referred to in the class, so it's good.
What is the difference between Astika and Nastika?
Astika and Nastika means, your Astik means they believe in God, right? Means He exists. Nastik means no God, right? Astik means believer. Nastik means non-believer.
What is the relation between
Radharani and Durga? Means Durga is technically Radharani's shadow.
What is
shadow? Shadow, right? Because the shadow is exactly the same. Shadow is considered non-different, has the same form and everything. But it's different. The shadow is dark, meaning original forms light. So when the light falls on the object, when the subject falls on the object, it creates a shadow. Right?
But they are very different. But
Durga is not bad looking. I mean, she was not, you know, kind of checking out all the other girls. I mean, it's whatever you find beautiful in this world of women, it's all coming from Durga. So she's okay. You know, I mean, that was the one problem with it, was there was that one demon. He did austerities and that, and then when Durga came, then she said, you know, can I have it? Huh? Vrikasura that had relationships with you. She didn't know what to do. So then, you know, so she went to her husband and he worked something out. I forget what he worked out. Worked out. Something very clever was worked out. They got rid of the guy. But so she's the shadow like that, because she has the power to keep all the living entities here. So technically she is the other side or the other mood of the Surup Shakti, because from Radharani she's Surup Shakti, the complete energy. But the Isladini is the presentation. But the Surup Shakti, where the presentation is arranging, that's Yoga Maya. Yoga Maya then is taking this mood of Durga when dealing with the living entities in the material world. Does that make sense? You know, in other words, Durga is a servant of Radharani.
Ah, yeah.
Okay.
How do we understand that the material nature is inert, and at the same time it's personalized? Like she's a person, but it seems that, you know, the energy that she personalizes is for us unconscious and inert.
Well, it's just like you have your body. You know, it's dead matter, but because the soul is there pervading, then it works. So it's just the way it is. It means you have matter that's Satchitananda. But you also then, if that exists, you also have to have the opposite, right? Ignorance, no knowledge, and no happiness. You know what I'm saying? For something to be complete, you have to have both. Like, how do you say something is good? Because there is such a thing as something is bad. Right? Does that make sense? So that's how you create rasa. There has to be these things. In the spiritual world, they enhance because they're all true. It all enhances the rasa. They're all perfect. You know, there's perfect, more perfect, most perfect. Like this, you have these different things. So you have different flavors like that. And so therefore, then you can establish these points of reference to create interaction. But in the material world, the duality just creates problem. You get caught up in that and you don't see Krishna, because you see it all as dual, but actually it's only Krishna. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. You mean it's not actually lifeless, we just perceive it as lifeless?
Yeah. Okay. Because it is material energy. You know? But that's just the way the shadow is. You know? But for us, we break it down into these things, so then we can understand that there's a difference between the spiritual and the material. Difference between spiritual attachment and material attachment, spiritual senses, like this. You're using the same thing, thorn with a thorn, of discriminating in this way. You're using the concept of duality to make a difference between spiritual and material. But technically, as Maharaj pointed out, it's all spiritual. It's maybe inferior spiritual, but still it's spiritual. Because what comes from Krishna is spiritual. Krishna is something else. You know what I'm saying? He's the origin of spiritual, so he's not spiritual, he's beyond spiritual. Because the material world, the spiritual world, and the living entities come from Krishna, so technically they're all spiritual. But there's higher and lower, means the internal is the superior, you know, and the jivas, they're the superior spiritual, and the material is the inferior. And of that, then the jiva is the subservient spiritual to the internal potency, which is the senior spiritual. Okay, does that make some sense? Oh, yes.
A shadow is an absence of light. It's like a hole.
Mm-hmm.
A hole doesn't exist except that it's an absence of something filling the hole. You mm-hmm. can't pick a hole, put it on the mantelpiece. It's not a unit like
But that's here. But it does carry the the form and the moods and that. That's why I also hear that sometimes that, you know, one's careful about stepping on, you know, many people follow, they don't step on someone's shadow and that, because it's non-different than them, because it's coming from them. But in the spiritual platform, that shadow is a person. Even in the material platform, we see that, like the sun and his wife, but because he was too bright, it created a shadow on her. And so then one day the wife told the shadow, okay, you run things, I'm leaving. And so then she split, and the son had, I think, 3 children by the shadow. It means Yamaraj, Yamuna Devi, and Saturn. And then there were children by the original mother, the original wife. They were complaining to the father that she's prejudiced to these children and not us. So we had a doubt that this is actually our mother. Like that. Otherwise, why is she prejudiced? Like that. So then the sun god pulled her aside and said, what's going on? And then she revealed that actually she's the shadow. And the actual wife is down on the earth. So then he came down to the earth. And then she was in the form of a horse. He took the form of a horse. And then from there, then was born the Ashwini Kumaras. Like that. So even here, it seems that the shadow has more substance. But we're not able to deal with it or operate it, because it does have form. So it's absence of light, but it's still in that form. So it's just Krishna is light, Maya is darkness. So that means there has to be something in between the darkness and Krishna to create the darkness. So that's Radharani. So in Krishna, the light of Krishna shines in Radharani, it creates the shadow of Maya. But they'll have that form of Maya, plus they'll have other. So they are persons. Like that, because it is an energy. So darkness is also an energy, so it is personal. Just like we're, you know, jivas, we're an energy, but we're personal.
Darkness is an energy.
Yeah. Because it's taking space and it has form and like that. But it may be an absence of light, but it's not an absence of shape. You know. So shape is still there.
Darkness on the light and dimmer. Can you take some darkness and put it onto light and dimmer?
No, because there's something in between. That's the thing, is the darkness is not directly connected to Krishna. That's why Krishna does not directly consort with the material energy. Like that. It means he deals with the original. And the shadow from that is there, but he expands to consort with the shadow. So therefore, he transforms as Shiva to deal with Maya. Like that. Because every one of his energy has to have a Lord. Has to have a, like that. So he won't deal with it directly, so therefore he expands in as Shiva, in transformed form, and he'll deal with her. Like that. Okay, last point.
Yeah, the same point, that there is a demon in the Ramayana. We used to catch its prey by the shadow falls on the water surface of the ocean, which catches that shadow. And by that, then we would ultimately catch the prey. Mm-hmm. We also stop Hanuman with the same.
See, original Aikido. That's even more catch the shadow, you know. Okay, so we'll stop here, and then afterwards, then you can come and take the sixth chapter.
Thank you, guys.
And hand in the essays. Okay. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Shri Prabhupada ki.
Your batteries are okay?
Yeah.
Your batteries are okay.
That's right. Yeah.